President Biden cracks down on immigration. Kevin McCarthy had to make some serious concessions, and it seems we're in a Mexican standoff with Mexico. You're listening to The Last Gay Conservative. I'm your host, Chad Law. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Last Gay Conservative. I'm your host, Chad Law, America's binary brother, the holiest homo, and the true leader of the gay world, delivering common sense conservative politics to all on the airwaves of our red, white, and blue rainbow. This morning I was sitting at Starbucks with a colleague of mine discussing politics, because that's all we talk about. And it's been chilly in California, so I had my collar and co dress collar polo on, and I swear to God, three compliments in a row from businessmen getting their daily coffee. You know, it really is a frustrating thing, that floppy, unkempt polo for men, which is why these new collar and co shirts are being noticed everywhere. I had a Henley neck cashmere pullover that I had buttoned down with the collar popping through. It was absolutely stunning. It's amazing how much more put together and cleaner your look gets when you have a shirt with the right collar. These dress collar polos have become my favorite shirt by far. They're super comfortable. I don't sweat through them. They don't cling in random spots. Polos have always been a little too business casual for me, but not these. This dress collar polo takes it to the next level. Go to collarsandco.com. They have many different fits, collars, and button options for your personal style. Did I mention they now have women's dress collar polos? There are more than a dozen color combinations, and most importantly, they're really affordable. Collars & Co., the dress collar polo that takes your fashion game to new heights. Okay, well, good morning from dreary Newport Beach. We've been dealing with off and on again rain for a few days now. We're such babies here in California, so when it rains for more than 5 days in a row, people literally start boarding planes for Mexico and Hawaii. Actually, my mother is in Hawaii right now. I spoke to her the other day, and I said, "You're going to Hawaii?" And she says, "Yeah." I go, "What are you going for?" She goes, "I'm going on a girls' trip with my friends." And after I hung out, I'm thinking to myself, is it really a girl's trip when they're in their mid to late 60s and 70s? I mean, is it a girl's trip when you pack Bengay and Metamucil and all your dinner reservations are for 5:30 at the hotel restaurant? I mean, at this point, I don't even know if it's a women's or a ladies trip. I think it's more like a golden girl's trip. And if I had to pick one, my mom would definitely be Rose. Sweet, but simple. My poor family, man. I am such a troll. I love making fun of everyone, and trust me, I get my fair share back. They love to quote my show back to me in conversations to prove a point. That's really fun. If you're trying to get healthy for the new year, don't forget to include your pets. Folks, I know you love your pets as much as I do. You hear me talk about Ron all the time. The first thing anyone says when they meet Ron is, "Wow, his coat is so soft. He's all muscle," which is all true. And unlike most Frenchies, Ron is solid muscle, no fat, has no skin problems, no allergies. His immune system is strong. And as far as Frenchies go, he's in the top 1% of health. Every vet he's ever seen asks me how I keep him so healthy. He's 5 years old, and other than his regular shots, he's been to the vet twice in his life in 5 years. Why is he so healthy? Honestly, it's because he's never had kibble in his whole life. I started Ron as a puppy on fresh cooked food around 2 years old. On the recommendation of a friend, I transitioned him to Darwin's raw pet food. Frenchies are generally fat and lazy and unhealthy. Ron runs 2 to 3 miles a day. The vets will tell you to avoid raw because, of course, kibble keeps them in business with allergens, powdered meats, and fake coloring. Darwin's isn't just raw food, folks. It's biologically balanced for maximum nutrient absorption and contains the best meat and produce possible. It comes individually packaged, so you don't have to touch anything, and it's 100% safe. The cost, I did the math recently, it's only a few bucks more a month than the super premium kibble brands, and you will see a difference in your dog in a couple of weeks. Seriously. Go online to darwinspet.com and try it for yourself. They love eating it, and you'll love seeing the difference. It's been seven solid days since George Santos arrived on the Hill after being exposed as a sociopathic narcissist who's either pretending to be gay for his own little dreamland, or he is gay and embarrassing the rest of us. I can't figure out which one. I tweet the House GOP, McCarthy, and him calling for his expulsion. I would honestly rather lose the seat to a Democrat than have this creep in office. That's how serious I am. McCarthy and the other GOP leaders have come out and said, well, he's been elected to serve. We have to follow the Constitution. Like I've said over and over, the lies he made up might not have impacted the election at the time, but it doesn't excuse it. And you can't prove that. It's just my speculation. You know, and it was interesting after my last show, my assistant looked at me and said, you know, you kind of, I don't know if I agree with you. You kind of pulled the liberal card out there about Santos, because it sounded like you were defending him against what Joe Biden's done. Well, if that's what it sounded like, that was not my point. The guy is a criminal. He's a grifter and a fraud. I don't know how he could pass an ethics investigation, but I love how Kevin McCarthy is like, well, the Constitution, you know, it's like, oh, all of a sudden you're a constitutional conservative. I don't think so. No, he needed the vote to get in. The bottom line is that this guy needs to go. Whether Biden or anyone else has lied is irrelevant. Yes, it does. And my point in the last episode was to showcase the wide spectrum of lies all the way from the president all the way down. However, it doesn't make it okay just because Biden did it that this guy does it, Republican, Democrat. The liberals, that's their whole thing. That was my assistant, what she was saying. She said, the liberals do that all the time about Trump. They said, well, Trump did that, so why can't so-and-so do that? And that's not a valid argument. So I agree, but anyways, they're yelling at me to stop ranting about him because it is my hot button issue right now, so I'll move on. Anyways, we're talking about my mom, and I'm not sure if I've shared this with you guys, but I usually have two Brazilian nationals in my family. My oldest brother is married to an ultra gorgeous Brazilian woman who's the mother of their three kids. And my older sister is married to just the most amazing, handsome, loving guy. He's also from Brazil. He's also a surgeon like she is. But I'm not saying that to get into the Brazil mess that's going on down there. The reporting is really shaky, and I don't think I'm educated enough to speak to it. Maybe I'll have someone come on and talk to us about it. But politics is always interesting when you have people from other countries in the family. You know, 2016 was big for us because the Summer Olympics were being held in Rio in Brazil. And one of the things I remember, and this is so funny because I'm sure she probably doesn't even remember telling me this, but one of the things that I remember in discussing the Olympics in 2016 was my sister-in-law was saying how disgusted she was by the fact that the government constructed these massive makeshift barricades and walls to hide the slums from visitors and tourists. Essentially, they wanted to believe that there were no humanitarian issues in Rio, when in actuality, when you look at the actual slums, I mean, it looks like India. And I bring this up because they did the exact same thing when Biden took his little trip to the border. They cleaned everything up. They built walls around unsightly areas and presented this beautifully managed, gorgeous border. And Biden thought, oh, this isn't so bad. It's just these MAGA devil Republicans complaining about it, trying to make me look bad. Now, granted, he's only there because he's under immense pressure. Him and Kamala have avoided the border like the plague. And it is a plague. The problem is his trip accomplished nothing for immigration or border security. A lot of people that I'm speaking to now say it actually might have set things back because he had absolutely no interest in seeing the migrant facilities, speaking with his future voters, the illegal immigrants, and experiencing what the Customs and Border Patrol agents are dealing with on a regular basis, thanks to his failed policies. Isn't that the consistent theme of the Biden administration? all show and no substance in every possible way. He talks a big talk, gets his photo taken, and then does nothing, period. So now Joe Biden is slamming his fists down and expanding the evil Title 42 that Trump put into place in order to control the spread of COVID from the borders. But there's a bunch of missing pieces to this whole immigration nightmare. And Biden just announced he would be expanding Title 42 and using that power to cap and create a number of loopholes that Nicaraguans, Haitians, Venezuelans, and Cubans have to go through in order to get humanitarian visas issued.
Today, I'm announcing that my administration is going to expand the parole program for people not only from Venezuela, but from Cuba, Nicaragua, and Haiti. We anticipate this action is going to substantially reduce the number of people attempting to cross our southwest border without going through a legal process.
Keep in mind, this is the first ever move of him towards capping or creating expellable offenses for these migrants. However, I've told you all since the beginning, this is Biden's border voter drive. The first time he's made any restrictions, it's just a couple days ago. When you look at it, it's very interesting why he's capping these four countries. And the experts, the brilliant people out there at MSNBC and CNN and the New York Times, will tell you the reason why he has to do that, because it's very difficult to deport these people because we have very limited diplomatic relationships. Then I heard the other day on the radio citing that these make up massive numbers of immigrants, and so by capping it, it'll help. That's bull too. Most of the immigrants are coming from Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. So he's under immense pressure to do something about the border so he can come out and have this beautiful press conference about how he's limiting this and forcing these guys to take different steps. But if you look at these countries, they represent damaged governments that are not democratic. I mean, if you look at Haiti, for example, they hold elections and have an assembly for legislative purposes, but it's a fake democracy because it's actually unilateral, which means the central government grants powers without the consent of the legislator or the people. Cuba, probably the most historic communist country around our borders or close to the country. They had a revolution. I don't have to tell you guys a history lesson, but Fidel Castro, 1959, they had a massive revolution. And ever since then, they've had an exodus of people leaving Cuba for the United States. The country is a communist hellscape. I mean, when you're there, all the cars there are like pre-revolution in the 1950s. They're all old, like 56 Chevys and Fords. And the inflation there is so crazy that a 1956 Chevy that's broken down and crappy would still sell for $20,000 there. On the other hand, a 2014 Peugeot from the UK would sell for $260,000. There's one party, staggering inflation, constant supply shortages, and the government military state is real. No, I'm not talking about Biden's America. I'm talking about Cuba. But Venezuela is the same thing. I don't have to tell you guys. They're on the midst are the brink of a complete social and humanitarian collapse because of socialist economic policies and socialist and communist political policies. It's led to food scarcity. This is the second largest migration crisis in the world, and the entire region is affected. The entire continent of South America is negatively impacted by Venezuela. Nicaragua, same thing, a democratic country that's been destroyed by socialists. I mean, the current leaders there have undermined every part of the democratic structure. They've removed separation of powers. They've completely rigged the electoral system and have major human rights violations on their hands. The power of that country resides in the hands of two people. I don't know if you guys know this, but President Daniel Ortega and the vice president of Nicaragua is his wife, Rosario Murillo. So you got a husband and wife team that essentially have all of the power in Nicaragua. Now, I hope you guys can see where I'm going here, right? each one of these countries is driving people out because of their communist, socialist, or authoritarian regime, or any combination of the three. These people are seeking true democracy. And many of them have seen their countries thrive under democratic rule previously. You can look to Cuba as a precursor to what Biden's trying to control. Again, he implemented nothing as it came to the border or border patrol. You know, Cuba represents the closest communist, true communist state to our borders, and it's been there since the 60s. And it's led to tens of thousands of Cuban immigrants who opposed the revolution to seek asylum in America. The immigration from Cuba continued as Castro aligned himself with the Soviets and took more and more away from the citizens. Wave after wave of Cuban immigration we've seen into South Florida in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and now there's another wave happening today. The first wave of Cubans that entered the country were the wealthier Cubans that watched all of their earnings and hard work get stripped by the government. Naturally, they come to the States and they are hypersensitive to anything that looks remotely like socialism or communism. Of course. Can you blame them? One thing we should always remember, that any time the democratic socialist arguments, the Katie Porters, the AOCs of the world, and you think, oh, well, that sounds like it could have some good to it, just ask anyone who's escaped communism or socialism and they'll tell you. But because Cubans have a natural disdain for socialism, most of the immigrants identify as Republicans or conservatives. Cuban Republicans have always been a small part of the Latino population that votes for the right. And over the years, it's continuing to grow as the exodus from Cuba continues. Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela are identical. See, these people aren't necessarily folks escaping poverty or inflation. I mean, they are, but that's not the driving force. For these immigrants from those four countries, they've watched socialism destroy their lives. Unlike immigrants from Mexico or Guatemala or El Salvador, these four particular countries represent true socialist governments, escapees of socialism. There's a big difference from the Mexican immigrant who can survive in Mexico but wants to come to the United States for more opportunities and more prosperity versus someone escaping death and destruction, famine, and severe inflation because of socialism. Immigrants from Venezuela, Cuba, Haiti, and Nicaragua aren't looking at this as a way to live prosperously and have a better life. To them, those are simply possibilities. They don't have a choice. If they speak out, they're jailed or killed. They can't feed their families, and the food is rationed so little to a bare minimum, they might get a loaf of bread a week. And the government has taken all of their belongings and all their property. They don't have a choice. It's a do or die situation. So knowing all that, wouldn't Joe Biden want to increase the number of humanitarian visas or asylum granted to those seeking escape from communism? I mean, after all, the reason we're supporting Ukraine is to keep democracy in that country, right? It doesn't make sense. We spend billions on billions to protect democracy in Ukraine, yet we block those escaping the same type of government we're fighting through the Ukrainians. So there's only one other reason. And it's because when people escape communism and socialism, they're hypersensitive to anything that even takes the shape of socialism. Their experiences, like all of us, often shape their politics, and they become pro-democracy all the way through and through. And that didn't necessarily matter to the Democrats when the Cubans were escaping Castro in the 60s. But today, we have self-admitted, not just right-wing stamped, but self-admitted democratic socialists all around us. One who almost became president. So if what I've said from day one is true, and this is a DNC voter drive to welcome as many immigrants as possible and then give them sweeping amnesty, then it's clear why Biden is cutting off those countries. There's a good chance immigrants from those four countries will turn out like the Cuban immigrants and align more with Republicans, especially as the DNC moves more and more progressive. I mean, we see it right now with huge numbers of Latino voters moving from left to right. The Democrats can't afford another Cuba situation where the immigrants align with the opposition. It's all a calculated effort. You know, when JFK opened the borders to Cubans, and it stayed that way all the way through the 70s, JFK and his other Democrat counterparts could have never imagined after they saved these people that they would vote Republican. This is the same thing. So now, if you're from a socialist hellscape and you want to come here, unlike any other immigrants, you're required to have a 2-year financial sponsor. You have to fill out forms online, or there's an app for that, which, by the way, these socialist governments all control the internet and what can be accessed. So you can imagine they won't be able to access the app. You must enter in through this country through an actual port, not open crossings. And if these conditions aren't met, you'll immediately be sent home. However, if you're Mexican, Guatemalan, El Salvadorian, Honduran, Iranian, ISIS, just come on through and we'll deal with your asylum later. What a joke. Because honestly, if he was really looking to expand Title 42 to help the immigration process, why wouldn't he roll back some of the 94 executive orders he passed in his first 100 days in office? He created the crisis himself. 94 orders. I mean, most importantly, he stopped the construction of the border wall, which I think is hysterical because now all the border governors, even the Democratic ones like in New Mexico, are taking shipping containers and lining them up to try to block because they know that the wall works. And of course, Biden's fighting them on that because he wants the border to remain open. He also put into place a halt deportation for 100 days. If someone, like, and it could be a criminal, someone gets picked up by ICE, they have to remain in the country for 100 days before we send them back, even a murderer. They also suspended all new enrollments in the migrant protection protocols, which is what was referred to as Remain in Mexico, which meant when you're applying for asylum, we worked with the Mexican government to make it so they had support to stay in Mexico while they're waiting for their case to be reviewed. He also terminated the asylum cooperative agreements with Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. What that means is essentially we are working with them to figure out how to end having to grant asylum through supporting those governments. Well, not anymore. He just wants to grant asylum to them. He canceled the PAICRs. He's criticized Title 42 and pushed for its expiration before the Supreme Court intervened. And now he's trying to tell us there's no issues at the border while he uses Trump's Title 42 to his advantage. Not to stop illegal immigration, though. Just to stop illegal immigration from socialist countries that may not subscribe to his voter drive. Why doesn't AOC, Katie Porter, Bernie, they should all go and talk to these people coming across, see how well that socialist agenda works. But don't buy in, folks, to this hype that Biden is finally doing something or adjusting the border or fixing the border that you'll hear on the news. He's not doing that. He's blocking people that are coming in that are going to be pro-democracy and anti-socialism, which is his entire base. Don't underestimate the political elite here, folks. Immigration is a tool they're using to their advantage. Because if you think about it, wouldn't you rather want to save people from the evils of socialism like we're doing in Ukraine? People who will love and support democracy and our Constitution versus people who don't really need asylum and are seeking opportunities? All right, let's take a quick break and come back and get into the McCarthy concessions. Yeah, I was just telling the team about how good my dinner was last night. I had a pork loin on cauliflower mash with this beautiful gravy. It was so good. And it was one of my Factor meals. I've talked to you guys about this before. If you're actually serious about getting healthy, losing weight, and getting your body on track for maximum health, Factor meals is the only way to go. I got on the scale this morning. I'm 5 pounds down since the last time we were talking about Factor meals last week, and I feel great. Went to the gym, have way more energy, and it really just kickstarts everything for me. I don't get the breakfast. I just have the lunch and dinner and some of the snacks. I love Factor meals. Don't waste time. Go to factor75.com. They have a 60% off special right now. There's five different meal types you can get, from vegetarian, keto, protein plus, Weight Watcher style, calorie counter. Whatever you need, they have it, and they will also customize plans for you. Please go to factor75.com, get healthy, feel better, and most importantly, lose the weight that you've said you're going to lose for the new year. People, we're never going to stop getting pounded with McCarthy drama. The drive-by media seems to think it's a catalyst for a greater party divide, and they can use this to prop up their Democratic base. Ridiculous. I actually loved the fact that it took 15 rounds to vote him in. If you've seen any of my op-eds or listened to any of my interviews recently, I've said it and I'll say it again. Democracy is not supposed to be easy. Democracy is not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to create arguments, debates, contention. All of the things that we saw happening on the floor of the House of Representatives when trying to elect a Speaker of the House is exactly how our founders intended. And I totally understood the fears of the 20 members of the Freedom Caucus that were really worried that McCarthy was going to come in as a California Republican. He was going to act conservative to get the support of voters and them, and then he would turn it around, like we saw with McConnell and Gramsci under Trump. They pretended to be conservative and they weren't. They were just wolves in sheep's clothing. And Trump did the same thing in 2016. I mean, he ran on a promise that he would investigate Hillary's email scandal and prosecute if enough evidence to prosecute was there. He would ask his Department of Justice to do that. He did nothing to go after Clinton or the Clinton Foundation, who then turned around, took advantage of the situation that they weren't being pushed by him, and created the Russia, Russia, Russia distraction, knowing that Trump wasn't going to do anything to them. That lost him a lot of credibility. We've got to figure out a way to beat these Democrats at their own game. They have gloves off with brass knuckles on. We need to match that, but go one step further and make it so they're the ones that are constantly in the red zone and we can finally have some reprieve. But in order to get voted, he did have to make some serious concessions. And most of the big public ones come with a lot of questions and even some concerns. I mean, the biggest one is this motion to vacate. Essentially, motion to vacate was removed by Pelosi. It's a House rule that's generally there that allows House members to enter a, what they call a privileged resolution, which just means that it's prioritized on the House floor for the Speaker to be vacated. It's usually five people. He dropped it to one. And so basically how it works is one member can offer a privileged resolution declaring the office of the Speaker vacant. It goes to the floor for a vote, and it's just a majority rules vote. You just need 218 members to vote for it. And so a few Republicans and all the Democrats could make the motion to vacate as well. But there's all kinds of procedures that can slow it down, et cetera. I mean, in the past, it's really been used as more of a fear tactic. I know the real famous motion to vacate threat, if you will, was against my man Newt Gingrich in 1990. Was that 97 or 98, 96? Hello, help me. It's like, come on, guys. You're all here for me. Anyways, so hard to find good help. Mark Meadows also issued a motion for vacate towards John Bonner, but that didn't go anywhere because Meadows joined Trump as his chief of staff. So it's really more of a scare tactic. You know, I look at it like a money back guarantee. Everyone offers one, but a single digit percentage actually takes advantage of the guarantees. It's just consumer confidence. And if they don't like it, you can send it back. Same goes with McCarthy. If you don't like him, get rid of him. Byron Donalds, my man from Florida. I love this guy. He broke it down quite nicely. Have a listen.
Secondarily, with respect to the motion to vacate, and I know this has been talked about a lot. A lot of voters are saying, what does this actually mean? Let me take a step back. Before the 116th Congress, Nancy Pelosi is the person that stripped the motion to vacate out of House rules. Republicans have said it's time for it to go back. And there is a negotiation around that, Because, again, if the people's house is truly to be the people's house, every member of Congress should have the ability to represent their district. So I don't think it's a big problem. There has to be accountability in our system of government, especially in the House of Representatives. And so that's why that was able to get negotiated back in. And we were able to land this plane. And now we're going to move on to the business of the American people.
Isn't he great? The next big thing that he conceded to was the floor vote to establish term limits for all lawmakers. It was bill sponsored by Ralph Norman. He's an active member in the Convention of States with me, and he wants to put term limits on Congress. That's one of probably the main goal of the Convention of States. Look, it's a very noble effort from Ralph, who I like, but I don't think Congress is going to put term limits on themselves. I mean, let's get real. Even if the House did it, the slime bags in the Senate wouldn't pass it, and Biden wouldn't sign it in order to protect his old time cronies. There's also a border security bill that McCarthy said he would get behind and push through the House in order to vote on that. It's from Texas House members. We'll see if that's going to get stuck in committee or other legislative administrative processes that will take a year or two to get it passed. They haven't said whether the bill will be on the floor as privileged, giving it priority. I mean, it should. It's a matter of national security, but we'll see how it makes its way through. Again, there's so many specifics we're not hearing, and it makes me wonder how much of this is appeasement and well-intended placation and how much we'll actually see moving, like now. One of the other things McCarthy did that I thought was really great was instead of doing one big, massive, biblical-length appropriations bill, he split appropriations up into 12 bills and opened it up for amendments. So that way, people can see exactly what they're voting on. It's more transparent and allows people to vote based on their constituents and not just because the speaker said so. He put a 72-hour rule after the release of a bill, a final bill, before it goes to the floor. They have 72 hours to review it. People are going to say, well, they gave them 72 hours on the omnibus bill of the House. No. That was all done behind closed doors and then thrown out on the floor for voting. This says after committee, after adjustments, after all the concessions are made, after the bill is ready to be signed, then 72 hours to review it before it goes to the floor for a vote, which essentially is saying there's no more scraping this stuff through like the Democrats always do. One great pattern I'm noticing with all of this is that all the GOP House members are pushing for more accountability, more transparency, and more consistency. And they're taking the opposite direction of McConnell's Senate. I mean, they've just spent 2 years being totally demolished and beat down by Democrats. And the Democrats used every trick in the book to grant themselves the most power. And McCarthy's saying, F that. We're going to do that, but we're going to do it according to the Constitution. And we're going to be accountable and transparent with our voters. I mean, their first conference they just had was quite a triumph. It seems that everyone's very happy and the party on the House is now ready to move forward and get some of this stuff done. And the only other piece that I wanted to bring up about this as well is that we know that McCarthy had to make promises to people based on flipping their vote. Well, of course, Byron is a stand-up guy and he's on Fox and he says exactly what he got.
Congressman, what did you get in Florida? Everybody got something, right? What did you get?
Well, listen, one of the things that's going to happen is it's been put out. I'm actually going to be a part of the Republican steering committee as Kevin McCarthy's designate. And part of that is going to be to make sure that the entire conference, you know, the ideological spectrum, if you will, is represented through all committees. And I think this is important because what I've seen in my first 2 years in Washington is this, and this is actually not Kevin's fault. This is the nature and the culture of Washington, D.C., is that the members are actually really separated from each other. They don't really get a chance to talk a lot and engage a lot unless they take specific interest to do. I think having more voices on more committees is actually going to help the Republican conference and Congress overall, so we can clear up a lot of the misconceptions about policy ideas and political points, so we can actually do the right thing by the American people through a truly deliberative process that is open and there's a lot of conversations going on. I think it's a great thing.
Now, has anyone else done this? I mean, I see speculation. Oh, he got this seat or this committee, et cetera. But I don't think anyone's come out and said, this is why I flipped for McCarthy. I got this committee seat, or he agreed to expedite this bill. You know, and Byron's seat appointment is perfect for him. And I don't think there's anything wrong with making trades or deals. That's what democracy is. He's such a great representative of our party. I think he'll be a great leader. But the point of all of that is to say is that we need transparency as to what these people got. I want to know what Marjorie Taylor Greene and the rest of them got for their vote to McCarthy. I'm a little disappointed in some of the conservatives because they missed some five key things that I would be my dream to see come up. The first one is that none of those people should have flipped their vote for McCarthy until he committed to overseeing and ensuring articles of impeachment were issued for Joe Biden. That should have been key. They also should have forced him to end earmarking. Of course, they all use it to their advantage. However, true conservatives should be anti-earmark. Those are the Gates, the Bobarts, any of the other ones. They should have held out and had that removed because the American people hate it and it's a big scam, fraud, waste of money. I also think Katie Porter should be forced to have an ethics committee review based on multiple, not one, two, or even three. We're talking 10 plus anonymous complaints and one open complaint about harassment, racism, bullying, and all sorts of other things that should not be happening in her chambers. I also think that George Santos should be expelled. That should have been part of it as well. You guys all know how I feel that way, and I really don't like the excuse of the Constitution. I also don't like the fact that there's conservatives on the Hill that are very put their faith first, but they're not speaking out against someone who is a total liar. I mean, it's all over the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, talking about lying, how it will go unpunished. It's really sad to see no more people aren't speaking up. And the last thing I wanted to see, and I don't know if there's a technical term or what, I'm not exactly sure, but I wish they would have spoken and put something in place around not supporting all the bullshit rhino bills that come out of McConnell's Senate and just taking it as gospel. Maybe it's an extra review process. Maybe it has to go through the Freedom Caucus. Maybe, I don't know exactly what it would look like, but I would have liked to see Kevin McCarthy take a stand against the Romney, Collins, Gramnesties, and vaginal dryness McConnells of the world who expect people like McCarthy to just accept anything that they put forward. And they will expect that, and he should put his foot down now. The debt ceiling promises and the rolling back of the IRS stormtroopers are all very positive. I'm still hanging on with white knuckles for this to start happening fast. I mean, what they need to understand is even if something's going to get held up in Senate or Biden won't sign it, you should still keep pushing legislation because it eventually will just make the other side look bad that they're not working across the aisle. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back after these words. Speaking of nasty pigs, some of you may be hunters out there, or some of you like me like to shoot for sport and potentially protection. Whatever way you use your firearms, one of the best investments I ever made is my suppressor or silencer from Silencer Central. Silencers are one of those things that people often associate with James Bond and assassin movies, but they're actually a really practical tool. I mean, for me, the training aspect, it's improved my shot dramatically because of the noise reduction. I can shoot without ears on and my trainer is much clearer. I feel much more aligned with his instruction. For hunters, especially those who use rifles, it muzzles the sound not to disrupt the entire area and scare everything off. I actually ended up with the Banish 45, thanks to the folks at Silencer Central. These guys will walk you through everything, and let me tell you, you will need it. You go to Joe Blow's gun shop, they have silencers there. They don't have the tools or the insight to walk you through. I'll tell you that firsthand. Mine took about 18 months to get a stamp through the ATF, and they will reject you with the slightest little flick of a pen outside of a box. They're looking for ways to reject anyone they can. Silencer Central was patient. They kept me updated. They handled all the back and forth with the various agencies, local, federal, state. I have never been happier. It's a great business. They're here in the United States, located in South Dakota. They have great payment plans available. They have a silencer for everyone, regardless of how you use it. Go to silencercentral.com and get one before it's too late, because Biden's trying to take these rights away from you. Silencercentral.com or call 888-781-8778. All right, folks, for our last segment, I wanted to touch on this ridiculous lawsuit the country of Mexico has filed along with 13 of our best socialist states in this country, claiming that 11 of the big gun manufacturers here in America are responsible for all of the cartels, murder, crime, and illegal possession of guns that happen in Mexico. They did file the suit. You might have heard about it when they filed in 2021. It kind of took a rest, and couple weeks ago, they had a hearing. Now, the good news is I was able to get exclusive footage of them entering and exiting the courtroom. You heard it here first, folks. No one else has this footage. All right. Sorry, I had to. Let's walk through their allegations and why it's completely illegal to even go this far. But they have help from a lot of anti-gun activists and liberal politicians as well, which is why this case is still making its way through. The allegations are completely baseless. The Mexican government is responsible for its failure to enforce its own laws and control crime and corruption, not us. Let me break this down a little bit more. So we have a law on the books called PLCAA. It's the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act. It passed in 2005 with huge bipartisan support across Republicans and Democrats, because the law says essentially that you can't blame members of the firearm industry for the criminal misuse of lawfully sold firearms by remote third parties. Basically, people who the industry members have no control. If someone just sells a gun to me without any checks, it's not their fault. I mean, it's the same concept that would keep victims of criminal drunk driving from suing Budweiser or Ford. I mean, no manufacturer of a non-defective product that is lawfully sold is legally responsible for the subsequent criminal misuse of the product. That is just fair. And so firearm manufacturers produce a lawful product here. We have the Second Amendment. We have the right to bear arms. And provided that we pass a background check, that's legal gun ownership. This is the rule for every firearm sold at a retail store in America, including gun shows. And there's additional layers for other things like silencers that have to go through the ATF. All the same laws also apply to the retailers along the Southwest border. And they even have more stringent steps that they take through the South to make sure these don't go into non-American hands. So to claim that these manufacturers are at fault for bringing guns over the border is just ludicrous. Can you believe Mexico comes into our country and alleges that its rampant murder, crime, and corruption are caused by U.S.-based firearm manufacturers? It's crazy. I mean, think about it this way. We're responsible because we share a border with Mexico, according to them. But we also share a border with Canada. Canada doesn't have a U.S. origin or U.S.-made firearms being misused by Canadian drug cartels or Canadians in general. The difference is Mexico, not us. They don't have legal gun rights in Mexico. It's absolutely impossible for Mexican citizens to legally purchase a firearm for self-protection. There's no Second Amendment there. But they have more illegal guns than any other country for the cartels. I mean, you just saw that recent shootout, right? The people in the airplane had to lay down. The cartels had anti-aircraft, 50 caliber sniper rifles, and fully automatic weapons. Some of the stuff that they had was military grade that wasn't even American. They got it from other countries. Even if the firearms they had were American, it's not the fault of the manufacturer of how they got it. It went through several different illegal moves before they got it to the end. So this whole narco-terrorism Sinaloa issue is now our problem. And it's wasting tax dollars and it's wasting time. And the bottom line is that Mexico, believe it or not, folks, is ranked in the top 10 most corrupt countries in the world. We're talking the same as Colombia, Iraq, Russia, Venezuela. I mean, the Federale chief just in 2019 was arrested in Dallas because he was taking millions of dollars of bribes from the Sinaloa cartel, turning a blind eye to illegal weapons, maybe. But that's Beretta's fault, right? That's Sig Sauer's fault. You know, and the crazy thing is that they won't even address their own corruption. And the corruption is what fuels the gun problem there. And the crazy part is even more so is that our firearms companies here do so much for safety, anti-suicide prevention. They lead efforts on the free firearm safety kits that are locks that you can go to any law enforcement agency in every state in the U.S. and they'll give you a lock kit for your weapon. They also are part of the FBI's background check system. So if anyone that disqualifies, the records are submitted to the FBI, also kept at the gun manufacturer, so they can never go like weasel their way back through. They also have to work closely with the ATF to prevent illegal straw purchases of firearms. I guess what I'm trying to say is that no one is more serious about legal gun ownership than the legal manufacturers of these guns. And American firearm manufacturers are really the ones that are leading the effort to make sure that firearms stay out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. The Mexican government can't say the same for its own efforts, especially on its side of the border. Not to mention that since 2008, we've given them $1.6 billion in support to prevent organized crime, money laundering, and transporting drugs and weapons through the border using what they call the Meridia Initiative. They are so arrogant, these Mexican governors and politicians. They're so arrogant. They march into the courtroom and they just spew these charges. And it's just really sad because then what happens is they're being used by American lawyers and they're using the power of another foreign government coming in to try to work around PLCAA, right? I mean, it's just the way they're doing it. So Biden's in support of it too. They're using the court in order to bring up PLCAA to get banned, take it to the Supreme Court or whatever they want to do, which good luck. Biden just met with the Democratic attorney generals from most of these states and the District of Columbia, and they're working publicly to repeal the PLCAA law and bring firearm lawsuits so they can bankrupt them and essentially remove the Second Amendment without touching the Second Amendment. That's Biden's thing. That's the DNC thing. How do we circumvent Congress? How do we circumvent the Constitution? Democracy does not work for them. I mean, Biden is the one who was the vice president when crazy Eric Holder allowed firearms to be illegally trafficked across the U.S.-Mexico border. I mean, do you remember Operation Fast and Furious? The firearms from Operation Fast and Furious were not tracked once they were smuggled into Mexico. And we didn't even know about it until that border agent, Brian Terry, was murdered by a Mexican national who had one of those firearms. Then they found another one at El Chapo's house. So if anyone's responsible for running guns, it's the Obama, Holder, Biden trio. So the Mexican government plus the socialist states end up in court responding to a motion to dismiss by the defendants, the gun companies. And of course, it's an easy one. They dismiss based on PLCAA. However, this brilliant judge, Judge Saylor, left the ruling open because he's an idiot, and he wanted to see it go to appeal. He left it open for appeal. It's so obvious. I mean, he opens up his decision by saying that he's sympathetic to Mexico's lawsuit, noting that a substantial portion of the blame for gun-related homicides in Mexico is suffering rests with American citizens. He found that PLCAA unequivocally bars lawsuits seeking to hold gun manufacturers responsible for the acts of individuals using guns for their intended purpose. So then he has to dismiss. He has no option but to dismiss the case. But then he goes back and says Mexico had made sufficient showing of standing for the complaint to survive a motion to dismiss on most counts. The court concluded that the lawsuit nonetheless had to be dismissed for failure to state a claim in which relief could be granted. That opened it up for appeal. He basically said, hey, you have enough evidence here. If we didn't have PLCAA, you have enough evidence here that I would allow the case to proceed. But PLCAA is just blocking it. He said Mexico met the burden of demonstrating that the injury to the Mexican government and its citizens was fairly traceable to the defendant's conduct, which thereby met the rest of Article 3 standing. That's, again, leaving the appeal open. The other thing is that he also barred 7 of the 9 counts of the complaint, and there were still 2 that were not necessarily within the PLCAA umbrella. So I think it's time now for the United States to sue the chemical companies that sell chemicals to the Mexican cartels that manufacture fentanyl. Or better yet, why don't we sue Mexico for creating an environment so bad that illegals cross here and they're illegally using services paid for by the American tax dollar? Why don't we sue them for all that wasted, stolen tax revenue? Better yet, Mexico, you never have to worry about trafficking or smuggling if we do what Trump should have done and exited the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. What a big crock of crap. NAFTA is one of the worst deals ever. Ross Perot was so right when he said you're going to hear a giant sucking sound. And we've been hearing it for a long time. I mean, once again, we bend over, we allow the case. Why wouldn't Biden or a diplomat to Mexico or a politician on the border come out and say, this is crazy? Why are we allowing this? And how is the Mexican government filing a lawsuit against our commerce when I don't know what percentage, I would say maybe 20%, 40%, I don't know, is of their GDP is because of us and the trade and activity with their country. And anyone here, Republican or Democrat, who loves this country, which should be everyone, should be outraged that a foreign government suing American companies that produce tens of thousands of jobs, hundreds of millions of dollars in tax revenue, and makes a legal product that keeps us protected. How are people just not pissed by this? I mean, when I heard about it, I was furious. Then it died down. And then right before the holidays, this judge dismisses the case, but with an obvious bias, supporting the lawsuit itself, arming these anti-gun advocacy groups with more legal precedent to keep this case moving and waste our tax dollars. Our relationship with Mexico is essentially one big waste of tax dollars. Because the tax dollars that we pay for our own services are getting eaten up by the illegals from Mexico that are coming here that have to leave the terrible state that the country's in. And it's really nice for them because all their poorest people come here and all the rich people that contribute to the government through taxes stay, right? So we get their best, if you will. It's a great way to pick your dodgeball team on the basketball court. Or where do we play dodgeball? I'm not sure. But this should tell you how bad Biden wants to remove guns. PLCAA, totally bipartisan legislation, totally supported, makes total sense to everyone. But he's moving it through the courts this way. So with the appeal, Hopefully the appellate judge will be some libtard and it'll work all the way up to an opportunity to maybe have PLCAA turned around. I'm not sure. I don't know his whole goal, but I know the reason why he's supporting this suit and letting it go through. I mean, he just met with the Mexican president. Why didn't he tell him to kill the lawsuit? Because it works to his agenda. 11 states are sponsoring essentially a foreign government to come in and steal money from our private businesses, which in turn steals money from our private citizens. It's pretty crazy to think the country of Pancho Villa himself would sue gun makers. I'm Chad Law, reminding you of what Reagan once said. We should measure welfare's success by how many people leave welfare, not by how many people are at it. Couldn't have said it better myself. God bless you, President Reagan, and may God save America.
Last Gay Conservative Podcast, hosted by Chad Law. Please visit us at lastgayconservative.com for this episode and others. We're also on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you listen. If you like the show, please like, subscribe, and share. Find us on social at Last Gay Conservative. We proudly support the following causes: the Convention of States Action, the National Rifle Association, the Heritage Foundation, and Big Brothers Big Sisters of America. Disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entities they represent. The Last Gay Conservative is a production of Bend Right Media. All rights reserved, 2022.